Hello, and welcome to another edition of No Lights Paranormal, where three nerdy paranormal investigators sit down and discuss spooky stories from the web. My name is Joe. I am the lead investigator.
My name is Teresa, and I am the historian.
My name is Alex. I am the tired Baba Yaga enthusiast and equipment setter-upper of the group.
Tired, huh? I feel that.
Today.
Perpetually tired. That is all of us.
Facts. So, last week we went on our phenomenal trip to Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Mm. We are reviewing evidence, and we will have everything posted for you as soon as we can, to be perfectly honest. I'm not exactly sure when that will be, but it's gonna come a day when it will happen.
There's a lot to look over.
There's so much. So much. So, yeah, today we are talking about New Jersey.
Yes, New Jersey. And no, I'm not talking about Snooki.
Right. None of that.
Now, we did find some stories here. It's more of an overlying theme, but we did find it. Mm. Jersey, you kind of got run-of-the-mill hauntings.
Yeah, I didn't see
anything. And I'm not saying that in a bad way.
Really stood out, like, oh my God.
Right.
Jersey's got a lot of groups, too, that, like, they cover a lot.
So, right, like, right.
A Weird News Jersey, for instance.
Yeah.
Great group of guy.
Yep.
Great setup. They cover a lot.
Yeah.
It makes it kind of difficult for us to find like the outlier story when you have so many amazing groups that make a lot of your hauntings very, very streamlined. And we try to stick with the like undercover stuff.
Right. And that's kind of what I meant by when I said run of the mill. It's not that it's not ordinary. It's just
there's not a whole lot of stuff covered. Been made famous.
Yeah. So, but still love you, Jersey.
Absolutely. So we are still, though, going to cover some of the lesser known hauntings, I think.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Lesser-ish.
Yeah, right.
Lesser-ish, exactly. So who wants to get started today? How about Al? Al hasn't started in a while.
Okay.
Wow. Just
who wants to go? You do.
Throw me in.
Take that.
I feel like I started not too long ago, actually.
But it was about 2-3 weeks ago.
Was it? Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's my turn. I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Fine. I'll start. It's
groovy.
Whatever.
Groovy.
So mine is kind of a little hodgepodge of like places that are all like spat together in one little area.
Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about the Pine Barrens. That's not one little area. That's one big area.
Mm-hmm. Monstrous even.
I'm going to talk about a place called Jenny's Jump, the Ghost Lake, and the Fairy Hole.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, one of the most scenic areas that you can find in Jersey is also one of the most storied. It's a park in Great Meadows, in the Great Meadows Hope area, named Jenny Jump State Forest. It features large glacial borders that have stone outcroppings, croppings. Boy, I can fucking talk tonight.
Pretty tired.
English? Yeah. Nope, feel that.
That were covered by glaciers 21,000 years ago. According to the legend, Jenny was a 9-year-old daughter of an early settlers who lived there. One day, while out picking berries near the precipice of a mountain, the young girl was surprised by a band of Lenape Indians of the Minzi tribe, who snuck up on her through the forest, intending to abduct or kill her. Jenny ran for her life, screaming, alarming her father, who was working in his field below. Jump, Jenny, jump, is what he hollered up to her, and poor Jenny leapt to her death, or so the story says.
Holy shit.
There's a cliff there, there's a ravine there, and she jumped.
What was the dad trying to do?
I guess, to be fair, I would have to see the lay of the land in New Jersey to see the meadow below. Like,
right.
I'm curious if this was a setup and he just didn't want to have to raise that kid no more.
No, so was it like a 20-foot ravine? Was it like a 500-foot ravine? Like,
what are we dealing with
like
here?
The way it's described, it's cliffs.
Maybe he was hoping it wasn't very far and she'd be all right.
I don't entail the word cliff and like small drop. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, that's like a hill. You jump off of a hill.
Or just drop off. You know?
I just got a mental picture in my head. I'm like, jump, Jenny, jump. Well, misjudged that one.
Right.
Well, shit.
500 feet later.
Sorry, I know we're making
lighter. Had a glass eye and had no.
Poor
I shouldn't make light of that. That's
no.
That's awful. That's actually really, really fucking awful. Poor kid.
No, she got away.
She did.
So anyway, located adjacent to Jenny Jump Mountain, there's an old-timey kiddie amusement park called the Land of Make Believe, which not only claims to contain the cliff that Jenny jumps from, but they even have a house that she and her family supposedly lived in. It's a white farmhouse from somewhere around 1748. It's located at the bottom of the ravine where Jenny took her final plunge, right beside a waterfall named Jenny Jump Falls.
That sucks.
Yeah. Let me just push the sad button.
Want to get the topography of this right?
I don't know. I'm reading words like cliff, ravine, like none of this seems like something you should have told your 9-year-old daughter to jump off of.
That seems more like I love Shaun White and I went.
Exactly.
I mean, alternatively, I guess if your 9-year-old daughter is on top of a cliff and running along the face of the cliff being chased by a band of Indians that are probably going to catch her, then I guess you do what you gotta do. But
yeah.
Damn.
There's probably no good answer.
No, there isn't. I'm not coming up with one, so
either ways, nowadays, apparently there's a loudspeaker on the outside of the building that plays a recording of the, that recounts the tragic tale over and over again to visitors.
What the fuck?
I don't know how many times I'd want to hear that, you know?
But what the fuck?
Was it like Forrest Gumping the shit out of it? Or like...
I mean, don't know.
Don't, Danny, don't.
Like, I don't know whether, you know, it tells the tale and gives a good 15 minutes between, or just right. Like, oh, by the way, the bitch jumped. Oh, by the way, she jumped. Oh, by the, you know.
Yeah, that's worse than that's worse than the Mariah Carey Christmas song.
For real.
So,
let alone the fact, why would they really want to, like, go over and over and over the fact that a 9-year-old girl lost her life?
Well, here's the best part, though, and maybe this was the right way to go about it instead of a loudspeaker that just repeats it, okay? So not far away from Jumpin' Jenny's house. It's weird that they're referred to as Jumpin' Jenny. But
yeah, whatever. I agree.
Yeah, I feel like, you know what? I may be making light of this, but people are making more light of this than I am.
Yeah. And that you don't get to pick your nickname. So
I mean, true.
So not far away from Jumpin' Jenny's house, you'll find one of those unsettling attractions the park has to offer. At first, the two overstuffed scarecrows standing side by side look pleasant enough. One is supposed to be a man dressed in a ratty old pair of overalls, flannel shirt, and a straw hat. The other is apparently his wife wearing a weather-beaten denim dress and a gingham shawl.
Mm-hmm.
Best whatever guess. The hell that is, I don't know.
Good try.
not familiar with the terminology of neither the fashion code back in the 1700s.
Burlap sack.
Right.
The sign posted next to the pair reads, Talk to Colonel Corn, but please don't touch him. You could ask him the legend of Jenny Jump, and they'll talk back to you. So they literally will tell you the story.
What the shit?
Okay.
Which, all right. Seems like an overload, right? If you just had the two scarecrows instead of the loudspeaker playing on repeat, like, weird, but maybe fine. Right?
Now scarecrows are like, no one talks to us.
At least you asked.
Right? I just don't know what to think of that.
Advertisement.
Shit.
So anyway, to carry on and get a little bit away from the 9-year-old cliff jumper, at the eastern boundary of the forest, you'll find the Shades of Death Road.
I want to live there. Mm-hmm.
Which winds its way up past Murder's Mountain and through Haunted Hollow on its way up to Ghost Lake. These are all places that are in this state park.
Yep. What the shit?
And apparently they all have their own little tiny hauntings that are connected to them. I did not pull up all of the facts on all of those different places because that just feels like it'd be a lot.
Sure.
But
it is.
Haunted Hollow, Ghost Lake, Murder's Mountain, Shades of Death Road, you can look those all up. From when I actually read them, they do seem to be more like urban legend-y stuff than...
Oh, okay.
There's been much speculation as to the origins of the name Ghost Lake. Some have credited the infamous moniker to a few local citizens' flair for melodrama.
That's a mouthful.
Wait, are we talking about Ohio?
I feel like every state in the country can like fight for.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
Like, yep.
Oh,
yeah. I love how they'll all tell you that their weather is just like Ohio's weather.
Facts. Facts.
Bullshit. bullshit.
How many times have you heard in other states, oh, if you don't like the weather, just wait 15 minutes. No, no, you're not Ohio. Stop.
Yeah, in Ohio, we mean that.
Anyway, as far as Ghost Lake, the body of water was created in the early 20th century when two local men named William Krause and Leon Hull dammed a creek that ran through a narrow valley between the houses they had just built. They gave the lake its ghostly name for the wraith-like misty formations they often saw rising off waters on cooler mornings.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a flow of nature. But
interesting.
I like the name.
Beautiful, yeah. But...
yeah, yeah.
I mean, let's be fair. How many times have you heard Devil's Mountain?
Mm-hmm.
All the time.
And apparently, like, out in Northwest, like, those are generally associated with Bigfoot hotspots, oddly enough.
Which is fun. Yeah.
So, either way. They also named the nearby mountain Murderer's Mountain and their property Haunted Hollow. Along the shore of Ghost Lake, you'll find a small cave known as Fairy Hole, or... Fae Hole, an English spelling, or no, I'm sorry, it's Fairy Hole, or it's Fairy Hole, only with the English spelling. From parking lot at Ghost Lake, follow the rocky trail along the lake's edge, about 200 yards, then turn right and climb up a steep slope to the cave. The main room of the cave is about 10 feet wide and about 20 feet deep. The floor is flat, the ceiling is high enough to allow most people to stand up comfortably, so not Joe.
I'd be fine.
Beyond the main chamber, the passage continues into smaller chambers and vertical shafts. There's a natural chimney formation at the rear of the cave that contains cave crickets.
I don't know.
Honestly, that doesn't sound as weird as you think.
It's fine. But when surveyed in 1918, the cave was found to contain pottery shards, flint, broken arrowheads, remnants of a fire pit, and other evidence of Indian occupation. It was concluded that the fairy hole was probably not a permanent dwelling, but was likely used as a simple resting place for the traveling Lenape hunters. The fairy hole was excavated in 1936 by archaeologist Dorothy Cross, New Jersey State Museum, who discovered 10,000 bone fragments from 23 different species of animals. Among them was the tooth of the extinct giant beaver that has been found nowhere else in the state.
That's a big beaver.
So what was it doing there then if it hasn't been found anywhere else in the state?
I don't know the habits of a beaver.
Yeah. I don't actually know the habitat / location of the giant beaver.
I wonder if it was like fur trading shit or
bars.
Something.
Maybe. It might have been. Like,
sorry. I made a wrong joke.
So, either way, that's the story of Jenny Jump, Ghost Lake, and the fairy hole.
And a big beaver.
Pretty terrible for that little girl, but...
I'm still curious, like, why the dad told her to jump?
Yeah.
Like, one, I get, like, if she's there, you can catch her. But even so, if it's off a cliff... That's got some velocity to it.
Yeah.
Right. And a 9-year-old girl's got some weight to her. She's not going to weigh much, but she's got at least 50, 60, maybe 70 pounds.
I remember one time in my just past teenage years working at the garden center in Walmart, hucking a 50-pound bag of mulch off at one of my friends from the top rafter thingy.
Oh, that's super.
Yeah. No, I remember working at Amazon when Spence asked for the cart
they
down the hill.
They did not stand up when it hit them.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, maybe she was just white and couldn't jump the distance between the two cliffs.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Got no ups.
But... Feels weird.
That's some shit right there.
Mm-hmm. Feels weird.
Yeah, that's...
That's
weird. Okay.
That's weird.
Anyways, good story.
Yeah.
I was also going to do Devil's... Or was it Death Road or Devil's Road or something like that?
Shades of Death Road.
Yeah. I saw that and I was
that's
like,
the one that's the little kid with the basketball, right?
Yeah. I saw it. I'm like, oh, that seems like good. But again, it's like a story with.
It's urban it's, legend. It's,
yeah.
Like if you park your car and turn it around and do something and then wait, a little kid's supposed to bounce his basketball across the road.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Which if you live anywhere in Akron, you get that anyways.
Well, yeah.
That's Ken Warren.
Has nothing to do with the paranormal whatsoever.
Sorry to all the cars I did that to growing up. Game on.
Scared a bunch of kids. All right. Ghost boy here. No, it's just Joe.
Yeah, I didn't hear. It's just me. All right. But interesting story. Is that it or you got some more?
That was it.
All right. Well, if you don't mind, I'll go next.
Please.
Since you said your story is lengthy and I can see three sheets.
That's full three sheets. Is nothing. I have
five.
I have
my
13
bad.
Sheets, actually.
Yeah, so she's going to need a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. If you really want to get technical, I could make this 23 sheets.
Mm-hmm. You know about condensing, right?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
Have you met her?
Valid.
I don't condense anything.
All right, so my story is on the Trenton Psychiatric Hospital hauntings. Like I said, this is an overlying theme. It's something that we've not covered before the place itself, but it's an overlying theme with psychiatrics. And since we just came back from Waverly, which is one of the biggest ones, kind of goes along with what we experienced there.
So just to be clear, it's called the Trenton site. So does that mean it is in a place called Trenton, New Jersey?
No.
Okay, where is it at?
I'm going to tell you.
Cool.
Yeah, call right. Your tits.
So,
well, like I found out where yours was. Now I just want to know where this one is.
Well, I haven't started the story yet. It was kind of a start.
It's just trying to
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time, Teresa. All right. Trenton Psychiatric Hospital, originally named New Jersey State Lunatic Asylum, has a long history of helping mentally ill patients and harming them. The hospital opened in 1848 and welcomed 86 patients. The first superintendent was Horace Butoff. And yes, that is the correct way to say it because I Google translated that sucker.
Super.
He was a good man. Was a good man and provided excellent care for the people in his care. Then Dr. Henry Cotton took over and the horror began.
Oh.
So I think it's actually just New Jersey State Hospital. So it's in the Jersey State. Doesn't actually give a actual location for it.
Gotcha.
This Dr. Cotton began his tenure in 1907. Cotton thought infections caused mental illness. To test his theories, he removed his patient's teeth, limbs, and other body parts at the slightest site of infection. Yes.
What?
However, antibiotics weren't in use, and hundreds of patients died from post-surgical infections.
Well, yeah.
So, the doctor trying to cure infections actually killed his patients by infections. He continued this practice until 1924, when Cotton was put under a review by a peer board. A well-respected psychiatrist, Phyllis Greenacre, I guess that's how you say her last name, which is weird because now I got the song in my head, provided critical reviews and questioned Cotton's work. In 1925, the New Jersey State Senate held an investigation and found the doctor provided cutting-edge treatment and approved of his work. He continued to kill his patients until 1930 when he retired. The hospital staff continued to remove teeth, limbs, and organs through the 1950s. After his death in 1933, a review found his patients' medical procedures killed 45% of his patients.
Oh my God.
Maybe they didn't number crunch back then.
I apologize. It is actually in Trenton, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see? That's why they call it Trenton. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the answer's in the name.
Sometimes. Well, which most people don't realize that Waverly Hill is actually named after the fact that the guy called it Waverly Hill.
Yeah.
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 Would you let him tell his story?
It was a squirrel moment. Shut up.
Every week. What episode is this? No, it's not just you. All right. So, ghost hunting in this asylum. It will be difficult to run a ghost at this facility or run a ghost hunt at this facility as it's an active career center. So it's still in practice. They still use it. Security guards often patrol the grounds during the day and night. You have to get permission from the superintendent ahead of your investigation and you'll need a security escort. So it's not like Waverly where they lock you in and you get
you
free
just
run.
Go.
It.
Yeah.
And the security guards patrol the outside. Yeah. This one, they're in there with you. So yeah, it would be difficult because you get them talking, you get them patrolling. It would be difficult to actually.
I mean, for me, I guess it would depend on, like, how often they do it. I mean, some of the security guards might be cool, and they just might be used to it. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. However, though, a paranormal investigator named John Stevens actually did record it and posted his findings on YouTube. You can actually look him up. Just go to the Trenton Psychiatric Hospital and John Stevens. So he took video while on the grounds using his ghost hunting tips and navigating the grounds. It was abandoned at the time. Just from the pictures, I didn't click on the video, but just from looking at the pictures of it, it looks like a typical old asylum that's run down. However, the confirmed ghostly activities have never been caught on camera. Again, overlying theme.
Yeah.
All of it has been by sight and not photographed or videotaped. Confirmed activity, Dr. Cotton's apparition, ghost of patients with missing limbs, Jesus. Disembodied voices, but no clear EVP, and orbs. And it's, I have to read a passage because you'll get a little kick out of it. And one of our listeners will probably groan at it.
Probably.
Only disembodied voices and orbs happen often, but you need to be skeptical. The buildings are old and decaying. That creates a lot of dust and bugs flying by all the time. Ghost orbs should have a solid white, gray, light blue, green, or pink color to them. Hey,
oh,
Ken.
Oh, poor Ken.
Yeah. Yeah. If they are semi-transparent and seem to have texture, then they are pollen, dust, or a bug. So, just throwing that out there, I had to read it. Ken, I love you. You're a great dude. I love you. I had to do that too.
I hate
news flash listeners. If you ever send me a picture of an orb, I'm going to tell you it's dirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, another news flash, we happen to have a member of our team is the person who created the orb chart. And even he, to this day, will roll his fucking eyes and wish he never did that.
Yeah. Well, this guy's the guy who wrote the article is taking it to heart. So.
Yes, he has.
But still good on you, Ken, for doing that. Like, you're doing good work, bro. Most EVP evidence gets classified as a B or a C. No one has posted a Class A audio sample online. As an active care facility, you may collect security guards, patients, or guests walking around the yard. So, again, it's difficult to get an accurate EVP. May not be a ghost, may be a patient or something like that. And it says most ghost hunters have had a subjective experience to it. Always, like, sight, never photographed, never anything like that. So it got me to thinking. We went to Waverly. Not going to say much in the way of it because we haven't reviewed all the evidence yet. But I have a thought. Most psychiatric hospitals and stuff like that, it goes in with what I was talking last time we did a podcast. In life, these patients experience something horrific. Mm. They may be ashamed of it, or they don't like that it happened. So, much like we experienced at Waverly, if you've ever investigated, they don't really come out and play. You more have to hunt them. You have to chase them.
True.
It may be the same thing with this.
That's a valid point.
So, other than the doctor, because they said they saw his full body operation, but never got a picture of it. Maybe he's ashamed of his body of work, and no photography kind of thing. A different way of looking at it.
So let me tell you a story about a place where we have literally gotten no photographic or video evidence. It's all EVPs.
Yeah.
It's all like watching shit happen. The new Memorial Building in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Amazing place.
Yeah, I remember you guys told me about it. Yeah.
Even the night where we had the most activity ever happen. And I firmly believe that it's just being in a building long enough at one time for ghosts to adjust to you.
Yeah.
That was the first time we had ever set up a DVR. We had audio from those DVRs of one of those balls rolling all the way up to where it should have been into view, and it stopped right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it like deliberately stayed out of camera view.
Yeah, and that's what the overlying theme I was talking about. When you go to these places, there needs to be a new train of thought of instead of just videotaping, recording the things that ghost hunters typically do,
mm-hmm.
maybe we need to come out with a different way of actually catching it.
Maybe.
Because maybe, and this is me taking a big leap, maybe these ghosts are a little shy. Maybe they don't want to be caught on video or audio because they're ashamed of how they died. Like I said, I'm taking a leap. I'm just throwing this out there as a train of thought.
One thing that also makes me a little curious is back in the day, people believed that capturing your image in a still
captured
photo,
your soul.
Captured a piece of your soul. Is it entirely unthinkable that spirits from back in those days might believe that it might do something to them?
Unless they're Amish, I don't think people believed that up until the 1950s.
Yeah, but we've run into tons of spirits that were from the early and even late 1800s.
Well, I was just speaking of the one here.
True.
But yes, you are maybe Maybe that's a correct assumption. Yeah. I don't know.
Even the spirits at Waverly were well before 1950.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, I think that belief died out in somewhere around the 1800s, I believe. Maybe 1900s. I'm not sure.
That but, is I'd have to research.
Yeah. But no, it's just an interesting thought that maybe these ghosts just don't want to be captured because they're ashamed or maybe they just want to be left alone. So yes, you might be correct of that they just have to get to know you, or maybe they just have to know that your intentions are correct because they're tired of being used for something.
Yeah, you never know.
So like I was telling my nephew on the way back from Waverly, because dear God, that was a long ass ride. That was just, sometimes you need to look at things differently and come out with a different perspective of it on how to actually capture it.
Agreed.
That was my train of thought of, hey, maybe this is something we could do because this is a second to third story and also experience something personally. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to hit it differently the next time.
Yeah. So, think about it from a different angle.
Yeah. So for future ghost hunters out there that are listening to this, if you got an idea, let me know. Hit me up. Yeah,
absolutely.
So
we're willing to try all kinds of cool shit.
And I would like to say, just in case he ever listens, that that is one thing that I can say that I do like about Andrew.
Yeah. He listens. Hey, Andrew.
For all the shit that I've ever given him, mostly because I give people shit that I like, I wouldn't give you shit if I didn't want to waste my time on you. Like, he's the type that does shit like that. Like, okay, like, initially, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
You know what? Give yourself 3 hours to evaluate in your head what we just did and what happened. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not that we didn't get anything. You know what I mean? We didn't go and get skunked. We had things happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waverly is just not the type of place that's, it's not Trans-Allegheny. It's not supposed to attack you.
Yeah.
This is a place of sick people and rest.
Yeah. And I felt calm there the entire time. Never once did I feel like.
And when Waverly was open, that was the whole point. They wanted their patients to be peaceful and
almost like a hospice
and happy.
Yeah.
Because they believed that all of these nice things were going to help heal them.
And I would venture to say that every person in there with the time frame of when Waverly was open and medical technology advancing, I would have to say that when they first got there, almost every patient probably had to go in there at least hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, and I will admit this now. We did antagonize a little bit. Me and my nephew did. Mm-hmm. But we didn't antagonize the patients.
So
we antagonized the doctors.
I did the same exact thing. Mine was very, very mild. It was more just picking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even call it antagonizing. It was more like, hey, where are you? Hey, why can't we hear you? Hey, make a noise.
Oh, no, we straight up antagonized.
mine was just picking, picking.
Well, to be fair, there's a strong difference between antagonizing and just being disrespectful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even think I crested into... It's all on EVP.
The antagonizing that I have ever done, I would not even call antagonizing as much as using what I would consider vocal trigger objects.
There you go.
For instance, just to explain to the listeners, like what we mean by that is when we go to Madison, when we go to the top floor, there's a surgeon that does not like to be called doctor.
He likes
by his proper surgeon name, and we call him doctor all the time.
Yeah,
we just pick
until
at
you
him.
Make a noise. I'm going to call you doctor. I'm not going to call you surgeon.
Yeah, show us that you're here if you don't like.
And the only reason why we do that is because he was classed. They said he was a dick in real life that tortured the patients.
Yeah,
so
he was really not a good guy, and heaven forbid you call him anything but surgeon because he earned that title.
Yeah, you can earn this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but no, that was just my train of thought with the story, because maybe when we investigate hospital, we do it a different way,
right?
Or come up with a different way. That was just my
thing that I noticed too is when we went to Waverly, we had Amanda she is a nurse, so the idea
I utilized
that she was calling for we need a doctor to come to whatever, that I think is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a nurse to play that angle, but I think it's a heck of a lot more useful if you are.
Yeah, well, originally, and I'll let you know a little investigation that we did, I originally had her do that because she would use the right tone.
Yeah.
And knew the proper words to say, like, you know what terms to use. Yeah, when you're trying to get a doctor to the room because, hey, this dude's dying in here, I need you here quick.
Exactly.
You know the proper things to say.
Exactly.
And then she hit on it. And right away, something like we heard noises. So it's like, I kind of got a little giddy. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dig it.
But no, that's my story. We're going to have a reveal of the Waverly stuff if we ever get anything off that. If we go through it all, whether we do or not. Yeah.
I've already looked through a couple of still shots that I definitely think are pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. But we're not going to talk about that now. We'll talk about that another time. So, Teresa, you're up.
We're discussing New Jersey, and I specifically am going to talk about the Seabrook Wilson House, which is also known as the Spy House. It is in Port Monmouth, which is today known as the Bayshore Waterfront Park Activity Center. So it has went from being a homestead to being all kinds of things, and now it's an actual activity center. So stories of the paranormal have surrounded this place ever since the 1970s. Known as the Spy House, this Monmouth County home has been overlooking the Sandy Hook Bay since the 1700s, and the tales this historic property holds vary depending on who is telling them. So it is actually super, super important for the people who currently run the place for the history of the place to be told properly. They don't want crazy ass stories out there that aren't real. So the historians are doing their absolute best to promote the factual history of the house. Mediums and other people have experienced activity. They'll tell stories about a woman by the name of Abigail, who is a woman who stares out of a window looking towards the sea. Apparently, she is looking for her deceased husband. Children playing in the yard who just dissipate right before your eyes. Whatever you believe, this place has been known as one of the most haunted houses in America, which says a lot. Really. So, according to a historic preservation specialist who is with the Monmouth County Park Systems, the home was constructed in the early 1700s. A lot of people believe it was in 1664, but this is actually a completely different property than the one that they believed. Standing in the oldest part of the home, she actually goes through a tour starting in the oldest part of the home, which is really cool. So basically what I've got here sort of outlines the way that she gives a tour. So originally, Daniel Seabrook built a 1.5-story, one-room cabin after purchasing 202 acres on this land from his stepfather, Thomas Whitlock, in 1696. Whitlock had already owned a property in Middleton Village, where the King's Highway area of Middleton is located today. That property and the Seabrook Wilson property are the two that often get confused.
Right.
So we know that Seabrook lived here in this house that I'm talking about, the spy house, in the early 1700s. And I have some really, really awesome pictures of this house, too. By 1717, Daniel gave the property to his son, James Seabrook. And in 1730, James gave the property to his son, Daniel Seabrook. The property exchanged hands in the Seabrook family until 1850, when it was sold to Lydia Seabrook's husband, William Wilson, which is how it became the Seabrook Wilson home. So still in the family, though, because it's Lydia's relatives that owned it first. Blah, 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 blah. Between 1900 and 1955, the property was rented out as a boarding house, an inn, a restaurant, and a beachside resort, until it ended up vacant in the mid-50s. Local residents actually saved the property from demolition in 1967 by pushing the township to buy the site. The Middleton Township Historical Society then opened up the Shoal Harbor Maritime Museum, focusing on the history of the Bay Shore and its fishermen. It was not until then that the house began its journey to being known as the most haunted house in America. Has been covered by the new U.S. News and World Report as well, as is being them calling it the most haunted house in America. During the 1970s, the museum's curator, named Gertrude, began to interject tales of the paranormal during tours. She starts by telling some stories that get people's interest. One of these stories changed the name of the property by which it's known today, the Spy House. She explained that Thomas Seabrook and was a lieutenant colonel, what is wrong with me, in the Patriot Militia in New Jersey, and he lived in the house until the time of the Revolutionary War. Throughout the majority of the war, the British had control of New York City and Sandy Hook, so therefore controlled the waterway. Seabrook's house was like a beacon and was a target for the British because it was located on the shore of Sandy Hook Bay. Her story combines both the fact that Seabrook and non-documented, both facts and non-documented stories about Seabrook.
Bless you.
Thanks, man. That was a cough, though. The story she told was that Seabrook was using his home as a tavern, got British soldiers super drunk, and then listened for them to tell military secrets.
Good way.
Right? The reason that's highly suspect is, first, it doesn't show up in any historical records. So there is no record of him knowing secrets he shouldn't have known, so they're not sure that was actually true. Says, we know that Thomas Seabrook applies for a tavern license in 1803, but that's 20 years after the war's over. So, yeah.
Still searching.
Right. He could have been operating a local tavern before that, but there was no records of a tavern before 1803. The story that comes to us about the spy house being here, so it's just basically unsubstantiated stories about that. So, might not even be a spy house.
Huh.
Jane Doherty, a psychic medium from South Plainfield who worked with that same woman, had given ghost tours at the Seabrook Wilson house. She believes that the house at one time was one of the most haunted houses in America. Stories have circulated for years about the ghost of Abigail, which is a woman who stares out a window looking for her husband who passed at sea. Many people have experienced seeing her while taking tours. Doherty's mother was one of those people who actually saw this lady staring out a window. During a visit to the house for an interview, Doherty said she brought her mother along and left her outside. When the interview was over, her mother said something really funny happened. She said, I saw this woman. She was standing by the water. She described the woman as wearing a long black skirt, a red blouse with a cap on her head, and her hair tied back with a black bow. Fearing that the woman looked upset, her mother approached the figure, whom did not move, but then she walked back to her car, turned around, and saw that the woman had dissipated. Doherty told her mother, who doesn't believe in the paranormal, even though her daughter is a psychic medium, that what she saw was the ghost of Abigail. And Doherty said that the tour guide had told her the name Abigail, and then they felt the presence of a ghost in the house on other occasions as well.
Spooky.
Right. However, historic records do not place Abigail at the spy house whatsoever. She says, I haven't found any Abigail in any of the records, stating that she has a pretty good property history from start to finish of who all lived in the house. She searched for the name Abigail, suggesting that maybe somebody had found it in like a letter or something that was at the house. So the point is, Abigail never lived at the house. She could have been at the house that was nearby and just visits the spy house, adding that the structure that Abigail may have been in possibly no longer exists, like a neighboring property or something. So despite the fact that there is no record of an Abigail, this woman is very real as a spirit. They see her often staring off over the water in exactly the clothes that was described. And lots of people that go for the tour see her. So they're not actually sure who she is. Let's see here. A lot of people say she's watching the sea waiting for her husband to come back, but that's not going to happen because he's dead.
Rapture.
Another story that they tell is that of Penelope Stout, a woman who was grievously injured during an attack by a band of Native Americans and left for dead. Legend has it that Penelope Van Princes from Holland married John Kent around 1622. On their way to New York City, the ship they were traveling in was stranded or wrecked very near Sandy Hook. John Kent was either sick or too injured to continue, so they stayed behind, and that's when the attack occurred. John Kent was killed, but she survived. They admit that that story has some truth to it, but they believe that the details have been exaggerated over the years. The first legend appeared on record in 1765, 3 decades after her death. The woman did exist. Penelope von Princess did exist, and she did marry a man named Richard Stout in 1644. He was one of the first people to buy land in Monmouth County. They first lived in Middleton Village before building a farm in Middleton Township that's now part of Holmdel Township. The legend made its way to the spy house, but they're not exactly positive why. People said that Penelope did at one point live there, but that's not true. She actually never did. They never had anything to do with this property or the house whatsoever, but Gertrude brought her into the house by saying, "I see a woman and she's gravely injured." That's what the psychic medium said, and that's why people just assumed that it was her. Penelope.
Oh. Huh.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Visiting the house at night, Daughtry and her sons, who is the psychic, noticed there were children playing outside. She said, "I could see them. I could hear them. A boy was wearing knickers with long socks, and a girl had on a long dress and her hair in curls."
Knickers.
Knickers. I love it. She thought how terrible the parents must be to allow their children to be playing out at midnight with no coats in the end of November. But then suddenly the children dissipated. She also tells the story of a preservationist who encountered the same children playing. He ended up in the middle of the group and he tried to get them to leave when all of a sudden they vanished right before his eyes and, of course, put him in a state of shock. One of the strangest happenings that occurred on one of the tours was the sighting of a woman. Some man who was taking the tour noticed a woman dressed in colonial clothing. She was standing right next to him. He would go into the next room. She was standing right next to him again. He assumed that she was part of the tour, or taking the tour. Later, he mentioned this to his friends who were on the same tour, and they told him that they didn't see anybody in a costume. Curiously, the man contacted the tour guides to find out the truth, and they said, no, there absolutely was nobody on the tour in costume. So whoever you saw, not us. So he was seeing a spirit there, and it was following him into every room, and her presence was next to him, apparently, but nobody else saw her. In the 1990s, the lady who owned the home at that point in the Historical Society had a bit of a falling out. Basically, they asked her to leave the home, no longer have tours or anything like that, leave the home, for whatever reasons they had. Problems such as where certain artifacts came from and no clear record keeping, and the interpretation of the house played a role in her removal. So basically, the Historical Society was saying that she had objects and paperwork on file that did not come from that house and that it was faked. Mostly because she was trying to hype the paranormal activity.
Ooh. Of course. Yeah. Money, money, money.
Exactly. In 1998, the property was transferred to the County of Monmouth and went through a massive restoration between 2008 and 2009. Oh, and back in 1972, the house was added to the National Registry of Historic Places. They also believe that it's such a part of the community and it has a whole lot of its own ghost stories, like the lady who looks out of the ocean, the children playing, things like that, that they want to promote the factual history, despite the fact that they don't actually know where some of these spirits come from, because the legends surrounding these spirits, they found to not be true. But nonetheless, these spirits are still there. They don't know where they came from. So gosh, let's see here. It is open to the public. You can take tours on Sunday between 1 and 4. There's actually a whole lot of stuff talking about different events that they had on the property, but these have already passed. So yeah, crazy haunted house. The history does not match it, but somehow or another, even though they don't know where the ghosts come from, they're there.
Well, the reason why I said, huh, is because it sparked an interesting thought in my head. We always talk about residual hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
How sure are we that residual hauntings are the original hauntings itself and not taking in energy of something else and becoming that?
I just don't know.
Well, I know it's just a thought, but
it's an interesting.
I'm not looking for a definite answer because I know we don't have one.
I think
right now.
Generally, in my opinion, I have always believed that a residual haunting usually takes place in the area where whatever happens to cause that residual actually happened.
Well, I know, but say the energy of that one kind of fell off or got transferred somewhere else, so the energy of that something else took it over. I don't know. I know it sounds weird, but I'm not conveying it properly, but it's just a thought that sparked into my head.
I mean,
sorry, I have a lot of those.
Energy obviously can't be destroyed or created, and it can move and it can change forms and things like that. But as far as I don't know that residual energy can transfer like that simply because it doesn't have any sort of cognitive thought.
Well, yeah, I wasn't meaning it as the thought process of it, but just. How can I convey the thought that I have out through my mouth and people understand it?
Are you saying like that a legitimate free thinking spirit could potentially use residual energy to its own devices?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Like, I mean, we always say that if the thought of something can probably possibly manifest,
mm-hmm.
What if.
Oh, you mean like our, Abigail?
Yeah. So what if we possibly manifest residual energy?
People see it and see it and see it and see it and see it, or say they do until it just becomes true.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning. Like, what if residual energy is our thought process of actually manifesting something?
That's entirely possible, to be perfectly honest. And if people over hundreds of years believe that Abigail existed, yeah. Maybe she's there now.
So that was just a thought. I have a bunch of those sparked in my head now. I got to think about them.
Just energy that sort of comes off of us as humans. Obviously, we have lots of energy. We conjure energy from all sorts of different places.
Listen, if you're trying to convince somebody the power of 1,000 minds can create their own residual haunting, then you're barking up the right tree, sir.
No, I already know that. I already know that. It was just that sparked like, what if we actually create residual energy?
No, I get that. I get that.
And that an actual intelligent haunting can use a residual energy on how they actually want to tell something. And I'm almost like a puppet master.
I'm a little more skeptical on that one. But
yeah. Rabbit hole.
But I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Mind you, I'm not looking for definite answers when I ask these questions because there isn't any right now.
One thing about this place, obviously, it's called the Seabrook Wilson House, but the Spy House, I didn't think that it necessarily covered very well why it was called the Spy House. It was because it was thought that the owner opened up a tavern there specifically to catch information from British soldiers. So, yeah.
Spy House.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but Unholy just ran through my head.
Yeah.
No, that, and to be fair, to touch on something that you said, I find that a lot of the buildings that I read about and research in a lot of places, and to be fair, I try to like avoid those places. There's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of, I find a lot of, and when I do cover one of the places like that, I try to say, oh, well, this is the local legend/story.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the website that went through all the court documents, yada, 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 that said, Busted, that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. And that actually is why I chose this story specifically, because these spirits are there and people have documented these spirits being there, but
there's no record.
Right. All of the urban legends that suggest why these spirits might be there or who these spirits might be are pretty much complete bullshit. So they are there, but we don't really know who they are.
And technically, that's when it gets interesting to me, right? Like, I believe it was a few weeks ago when I covered a story fairly similar. Like, hey, I read this. And it said most of this story is bullshit, yet these people are actually seeing this stuff.
Exactly.
Right. So, right. Well, that also comes, do you trust the people when they say it? That opens up a whole other can of worms.
It's just very interesting sort of mind over matter situation.
Yeah, I strongly believe in mind over matter.
Absolutely, I agree.
Because if I mind, it matters.
Exactly.
Knee slapper.
So that is my story.
Yeah, so that's all the stories we got.
I hope you guys enjoyed. Yeah, do your research. Just because some dude says that her name's Abigail, don't mean her name's Abigail.
Yeah, check more than one website. And don't be that group that goes in and hears the story during the tour that like, oh, and this is Abigail's room. And it's just like, okay, so when I ask for EVPs, I'm just going to ask for Abigail in this room and that's it.
Yeah, because you may be talking to somebody calling them the wrong name and then you ain't going to get shit because you're calling them the wrong name.
We've that done that. You might be manifesting some shit.
We've right? done that and found something interesting. So
facts. Facts. So, yeah, so what are we doing next week?
What do you want to do next week?
A state?
Oh, you meant what state are we doing next
week? Yeah, yeah, yeah. what are we going to do tonight, Pinky?
Path here. We're going to take a state that's probably, I would say, probably going to be really interesting. I think Hawaii is going to be next week.
Ooh, Hawaii.
That one will be interesting. There's like a lot of
will be super interesting because it's a weird a lot different
of lore. Yeah. But
the
yeah.
really cool part is like
pretty spiritual culture.
A lot of the hauntings that I have heard about, so I would assume they would be the popular ones. They're not just legends. Like people legit stay off the street after dark. So, yeah.
Different cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like different cups of tea.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Oh, especially with the, like my immediate brain went my immediate thought went to lore because dear Lord.
Yeah, there's a lot of it there.
Yeah.
A lot of fun stuff. Absolutely.
That's but yeah, gonna be no, Hawaii's going to be fun.
Yeah, I dig it.
Expensive, but fun.
Exactly. I dig it.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. My only hope is that I don't end up wanting to take a trip to Hawaii after I read about
Oh, I mean.
You don't already?
I absolutely want to go see the volcano god and all that good, happy stuff. Like, I'm all in.
It's warm.
Warm.
It's warm, man. Like, I don't have to worry about buying parkas and shit.
This is true. This is, there well, will, maybe there will be no blizzard to drive through, which is lovely.
And if there is, I'm going to be pissed.
I know, right? We just took the snow fucking with us. Damn you, Ohio. So, yeah.
Still love you.
We thank you so much, New Jersey. We definitely had some fun with this one. Yeah. I loved being able to delve into a story that was full of fact and fiction.
Yeah. It's not, when I said it earlier, it wasn't that I was disappointed in New Jersey. I wasn't. It was just with all the pomp and circumstance around New Jersey from Jersey Shore and all that, you kind of get a thing in your head on what a state's like. It's not like that at all.
Right.
So it's like, all right, this is actually kind of a regular state. Like, all right. And that's not saying it in a bad way. So look, yeah, Jersey, yeah. I love you. I loved going there. Even though I hated driving on your highways, I loved going there. It was cool.
Christ, your highways are scary.
I will say that one thing that I appreciate about New Jersey, and I feel like growing up when I was like, you know, 16, 17, 18, doing dumb shit in Ohio, right? Is New Jersey was home to a lot of really cool, like, urban legends and shit.
Yeah.
The sad part about urban legends is it's not super something that we cover a lot on our podcast, but that's only because they're so short.
Yeah.
True.
Like, how am I supposed to stretch, you know, two and a half, three paragraphs into a 15-minute story when I've never been there to experience it.
Well, right. I'll tell you, I could figure out how to stretch a 15.
We know you can.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about that shit all day.
And into tomorrow.
So, Jersey, again, thank you. In Hawaii, we will see you next week. In the meantime, we would absolutely love to hear your guys' stories or suggestions on stories that you would like to hear us cover once the states are good. You can reach out to us at nolightsparanormal@gmail.com, nolightsparanormal on Facebook. We are soon going to be getting the streaming stuff set up for our all the stuff that we took at Waverly. That will be on YouTube, also a No Lights Paranormal. Yeah. Like, subscribe, whatever all those cool little social things are.
Like, subscribe, hit the share button.
Yeah, the share button. I like share buttons. Share buttons are good. and click I believe that I missed X. You can find us at No Lights Para.
Hello, Elon.
Exactly. Thank you, Elon. We appreciate your platform on X. So, yeah. Email us, say hello, share your stories, share your pictures, share everything ghosty. We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening to us.
Don't fuck with the Baba Yaga.
You dance with it.